Welcome everyone who's just dialing in, and welcome again to those of you who were here for the insider portion. We are so thrilled to be sharing Heather Bryant with you today on Coffee with the Coder, episode 99. She's just been giving us some information about breast cancer, and I think she might want to finish it before we get into the questions. Go ahead, Heather.
So I think we left off with CPT for breast cancer. So just
yes.
I wanted to say was for more information on CPT coding for breast procedures, we do have a few courses on AQIQ that you can reference if you're interested. And then before I wrap up, I just want to mention some ways that we're encouraged to reduce our risk of breast cancer. And that's, first, always ask your doctor about breast cancer screening. It's generally recommended to start doing mammograms around 40, but that's not really a number that's set in stone, so it's going to depend on your own history. So you need to talk to your doctor. Also, make sure you're performing breast self-exams, and if there's any new change, any lumps, or any unusual signs in your breast, again, talk to your doctor. Drink alcohol in moderation, exercise, and try to maintain a healthy weight. I know that can seem hard sometimes, but we want to do whatever we can to help. And then lastly, choose a healthy diet. The Mayo Clinic states that women who eat a Mediterranean diet supplemented with extra virgin olive oil and mixed nuts may have a reduced risk of breast cancer. And the Mediterranean diet focuses mostly on plant-based foods like fruits and vegetables and whole grains, legumes, and nuts. People who follow the Mediterranean diet choose healthy fats like olive oil over butter and fish instead of red meat. And as far as diets go, the Mediterranean diet really does leave room for some pretty tasty food, although I, for one, would probably try to sneak in some butter every now and then because it's kind of hard to resist. So before we get into the questions, I want to let everybody know that we love getting your questions. So please, please, please send us questions. We're always here to help. And also, I think Pam said earlier in our call, for those of you on Facebook Live who don't hear her, our next episode is episode 100. I can't believe we're at 100 already. Time really flies. So please join us and bring your friends. There are going to be some really awesome prizes.
Yes, there are. Thank you so much, Heather. We really appreciate all that extra work you do to give us the 10-minute conversation for the insiders, so that's awesome. Now, I'm going to read the question out for you for those of us on the conference call, and then if you don't mind repeating it for those that are not on the conference call, okay?
Sure. I will repeat the question.
Thank you. Our first question is from Anonymous. It's an inpatient rehab person. They say, inpatient rehab coding for stroke deficits. This patient has a right pontine stroke. I don't know if I said that right. His deficits include left-sided hemiplegia, oral dysphagia, and diplopia. The exam on progress notes documents dysarthria. Does the dysarthria have to be linked to the stroke in order to code it as a late effect of stroke? When I look up dysarthria, it has a subterm of following in the code book, not with or in. So I feel like it should be linked, but I often see deficits linked without documentation on stroke charts, and I'd really like to know what you think about this.
Okay, so for those of you who are just on our Facebook Live stream or YouTube stream, I'm going to repeat that question because you didn't hear Pam. So the question is an IRF question, and the question is, a patient with a right pontine stroke has deficits including left-sided hemiplegia, oral dysphagia, and diplopia. The exam on progress notes documents dysarthria. Does the dysarthria have to be linked to the stroke in order to code it as a late effect? Dysarthria has a subterm of following in the code book, but not with or in, so they feel like it should be linked, but it's often you see the deficits linked without documentation on stroke charts, so they wanted our take on it. So in answering this question, I would agree with you in this case that the dysarthria should be linked to the stroke via documentation. I don't know the verbiage of that link. It needs to explicitly be that the dysarthria is due to a stroke or that the hemiplegia is due to a stroke, but the physician needs to make sure and make it clear in the documentation that the conditions are linked. Because although it's likely that dysarthria is from the stroke, it can be from something else. The ICD-10, and so as coders, we can't make the assumption that they are just automatically linked. The ICD-10 guidelines tell us the words with or in should be interpreted to mean associated with or due to when it appears in a code title, the alphabetic index either under the main term or subterm, or an instructional note in the tabular list. Now, as you indicated, the dysarthria has the subterm following, and if we look up the term stroke, there's no subterm that links it with other conditions. But then the guidelines go on to state that for conditions that are not specifically linked by these relational terms in the classifications or when a guideline requires a linkage between the two conditions, that it explicitly be documented. Provider documentation must link the conditions in order to code them as related. So if documentation is unclear, the best practice is always to query the physician.
Thank you. Now I have another anonymous question, and this one is also from an inpatient rehab. The person says, our doctors are using the term disuse myopathy. How do we code that?
Okay, so our second question is also from an IRF setting, and the question is, our doctors use the term disuse myopathy. How do we code it? So I always like to evaluate the documentation to see if there's an opportunity for clinical documentation improvement, which is typically going to be the case. Those opportunities may mean that a query is warranted. Many physicians will state disuse myopathy when they mean weakness or debility or when there could actually be a true myopathy. The record should provide the evidence that indicates how that decision was made for the diagnosis, as well as clinical indicators to determine if there is a true myopathy, which has certain characteristics. According to the Cleveland Clinic, myopathy refers to a clinical disorder of the skeletal muscles, abnormalities, and muscle cell structure or metabolism that leads to various patterns of weakness and dysfunction. They also state that myopathies are characterized by motor symptoms in the absence of any sensory involvement. Both myopathies manifest with weakness involving the proximal muscles, and commonly pelvic GERD muscles are involved before, and much, much more severely than shoulder GERD muscles. Some myopathies are associated with atypical distributions of weakness, such as an inclusion of body myositis, which is an inflammation myopathy seen typically in older men that manifests with weakness in the fingers and flexors or quadriceps. So more proximal than distal, meaning that in the core, that it's in the core more than in the limb. Now, it's really difficult to tell without a review of the documentation and an evaluation of the clinical picture. Is it really true disuse myopathy, which is the M62.50 range, which would be then further specified by the body part, or is there a true myopathy, G72.89 or G72.9, or is it something else? And what are the clinical factors and tests leading to that diagnosis? Disuse myopathy is also called, make sure I'm saying this right, cachectic. I think I said that right. Myopathy or disuse atrophy, including marked wasting and weakness of the muscles, which according to an article that's titled Stepwise Approach to Myopathy and Systemic Diseases, which was published in Frontiers in Neurology all the way back in August of 2011. The article actually describes all of the various types of myopathy, and it's an interesting read. Myopathies can be caused from medications, from other illnesses, or they can be inherited, and knowing the cause will help to properly assign the code. Now, based on that article and other documentation that we found, disuse myopathy would be reported with code one of the codes from the M62.50 series. And if not further specified to a specific site, then you would be probably using the M62.59 code for muscle wasting and atrophy, not elsewhere classified multiple sites. Of course, the documentation would need to provide that detail of multiple sites. So knowing the underlying cause of disuse myopathy could make a difference in the IGC as well. Without further clarification from the physician, coding and supporting the need for rehab encounters and IGC can be risky. You're going to want to validate that it is a true myopathy before you report it to G72.89 or G72.9 or any other myopathy code. So Whereas disuse sounds like there's a weakness from sedentary life, which could lead into myopathy. Myopathy actually involves the breaking down of the muscles. So it sounds like this one might need a query. And if your physician or your physicians are stating disuse myopathy frequently, then education is probably in order.
Thank you. Thank you. I love how you break that down and show us all those back pieces of it. That's wonderful. Now, I have one more. I think it's going to be really quick, so I know we're at 10 minutes already. But this one, I don't know what kind of provider it is, and it is anonymous, which that brings up something new I'm going to mention in a moment. But here's a really quick question. Can we report code Z43.0 for StomaCare after a trach has been removed?
Okay, so this one is from just an anonymous question with no provider type stated. And the question is, can you report Z43.0 for StomaCare after a trach has actually been removed? So absolutely, Z43.0, which is attention to trach, can be used if you're still caring for the stoma, like wound care or anything else. I would add, though, that best practice would be for the physician to clearly document that that stoma is still being cared for, such as stating something like trach decannulated, nursing continuing wound care management.
Excellent. Thank you very much. I know you see probably a lot of that when you're reviewing records. And those on
yes.
the call are probably seeing it a lot in the ones that they're addressing as well. So now what I mentioned was we had three anonymous questions today. We love anonymous questions. And we love non-anonymous questions, so we don't have a pick between one or the other. You can submit either type at aq-iq.com under the Ask tab. It just says Ask Us. And then you can put in your question, you can put in your name, and then you can also choose if you would like to be anonymous, which that all of that meant that we're going to give away our mug today. So today's mugging is going to be someone who dialed in on the phone on the free conference line. And so I have been furiously writing down phone numbers and parts of the caller ID just enough to where maybe you'll recognize yourself when I pull it out of the hat here on my desk. And let's see who's going to be our winner today.
Okay, so for those of you who are on just Facebook Live and I'm just sitting here, Pam is pulling out the name of an anonymous somebody for our mugging. Because they're all anonymous people, she's just having to pull one of you who are listening.
Absolutely. Okay, so congratulations. I don't know if your name is the same as your caller ID, but perhaps you will recognize yourself. It says you're Lynn, and your number ends in 02. So I'll be giving you a phone call and find out where to send your mug. Congratulations. I am so looking forward to having you all join us with all your friends on the next episode, number 100, because we got lots of fun stuff going to happen on episode 100. And Heather, would you like to say anything else before I say goodbye?
I'll just tell the Facebook users that it was Lynn, I believe, who won our mug, or at least that's her name, the name Pam has. And like we said earlier, our 100th episode is coming up, so I hope you guys join us for that one. And please, we're always looking for questions, and we wanna help you guys if you have questions. So send those in if you have them.
Excellent. See you in 2 weeks.